give me lots of things to remember, and they teach me a lot of things to remember.
My name is Sakaya. I'm 11 years old, and I'm in sixth grade at Manchester Academic Charter School in Vicksburg, Pennsylvania. I am thankful for my family because my mother takes care of me, and I know that without her, I would have no one like her to take care of me. Another thing I am thankful for is my friends because I like having people to talk to. And the last thing I'm thankful for is my life because without it, I would not exist. So remember, when you are feeling down, you would not be here if you were not born.
Larry in Elwood City has the great after-dinner movie. Or maybe even one you watch while preparing things. It's called The Gizzard of Oz. Or maybe The Giblets of Oz.
If you know the chorus of this song, just please sing along. It's so easy to dream of the days gone by. It's a hard thing to think of the times to come. But the grace to accept every moment as a gift is a gift that is given to some. What can you do with your day? But work and hope, let your dreams bind your work to your play. What can you do with each moment of your life but love till you've loved it away? Love till you've loved it away. There are sorrows enough for the whole world's end. There are no guarantees but the grave. But the lives that we live and the time that we spend are a treasure too precious to save. What can you do with your days? But work and hope, let your dreams bind your work to your play. What can you do with each moment of your life but love till you've loved it away? Love till you've loved it away. As it was, so it is, as it is, shall it be, and it shall be, while lips that kiss have breath. Many waters indeed only nurture love's seed, and its flower overshadows the power of death. What can you do with your days? But work and hope, let your dreams bind your work to your play. What can you do with each moment of your life but love till you've loved it away? Love till you've loved it away. What can you do your days, but work and hope, let your dreams bind your work to your play. What can you do with each moment of your life, but love till you've loved it away? Love till you've loved it away.
Bob Franke. with Thanksgiving Eve, a favorite of his, and there are a few more to share. The Rock could become Plymouth Rock. John and Carrick mentions Close Encounters of the Drumstick kind. Bill has a great one. Rumple Turkey Skin. Jim has L-Tryptophan to Bountiful. And Mike has perhaps the most efficient of them. He just adds an E to Life of Pi.
The Mary Jane Berger Memorial Foundation joins you in supporting the Saturday Light Brigade. The Mary Jane Berger Memorial Foundation is devoted to helping children and families learn about herbs, their cultivation, and uses. Additional information about herbs is available from the Herb Society of America at herbsociety.org or at mjbergerfoundation.org.
Pappy Dog wants to be sure we honor John Glenn since he's in New Concord with all the right stuffing. And I'll add, I know what you ate last winter. Coming up, more fun on our Youth Express segment. You're going to hear some teens talking about educators and the supports they would like to have. We also have another poet. And then in our 11 o'clock hour today, live local music. And I'm pulling up my paperwork here to get this exactly right. Pennsylvania Dutch-inspired folk jazz with the artist known as Distelfink, broadcasting live from historic Allegheny Square along with Ricky Berger. This is Larry Berger, and this is the show that gets your weekend off to a good start, the Saturday Light Brigade, Saturday mornings at WRCT Pittsburgh, WIUP FM Indiana, WMCO New Concord, WNJR Washington, WCUC Clarion, PCTV Comcast 21 Verizon 47 Pittsburgh, WMCK.FM McKeesport, Radio Phoenix.org, Loudspeaker.FM Fort Collins, Colorado, and SLBRadio.org. /radio.
Out of date, out of style. Sounds as if it's been around a while. There's no excuse. It's just a useless waltz. Play it soft. Play it loud. This is never going to draw a crowd. Why introduce another useless waltz? Will it sell? Could maybe some payola hype it off the ground? Who can tell? It could become tomorrow's standard disco sound. So play it once and then once more. Figure out what we can use it for, but what's the use? It's still a useless waltz. Payola, hype it off the ground. Who can tell? It may become tomorrow's standard disco sound. So we'll take it up a half a tone and overdubbed electric valve trombone. It's well produced with no apparent faults. But what's the use? It's still a useless waltz.
The late Dave Frischberg, he passed away on a Wednesday at the age of 88. John and Carrick, last hour, if you were with us, we were talking about movies with titles re-engineered for Thanksgiving. In fact, even if you weren't with us, we were talking about that. John and Carrick has The Turkey Shank Redemption. Oh, I'm going to add a few good menus. And Charlie had the magnificent 7-course meal. Last week's segments featuring the Steel City Shakespeare Center Youth Academy Fall Showcase, Pittsburgh Center for Creative Reuse, Bach Choir of Pittsburgh, Pittsburgh Youth Symphony Orchestra, Point Park University animators Alwyn Holder and Brooke Doran, youth poets Ikao Apaku Dakwa and singer-songwriter Ethan Tucker are now available at Neighborhood Voices. .org. In a moment, we have an episode from our Remaking Tomorrow podcast, Youth Takeover Edition, that we think you'll enjoy hearing. Before, just a few more youth to hear from, as captured during our Mastery Through Media program at Manchester Academic Charter School.
My name is Alonzo. I'm 11 years old, and I'm in 6th grade at Manchester Academic Charter School in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I'm thankful for my family because I wouldn't be where I am today. I wouldn't be at school right now, and I will be hungry and not experience life.
My name is Sean. I'm 12 years old, and I'm in 7th grade at Manchester Academic Charter School in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I'm thankful for my family and my life because I have two wonderful parents that loves me, that cares about me, and that loves to make sure that everything's all good for me. I'm thankful for my life because I have a wonderful and funny family. I am thankful for my friends because they always make sure that I'm all right and make sure that everything's cool. I'm also thankful for my home because we have a big, giant house, and we also have a game room with a popcorn machine.
My name is Hajia. I am 12, and I am in 7th grade at Manchester Academic Charter School in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I am thankful for my family and my home. I'm thankful for my family because sometimes they give me whatever I want and give me money. And I'm thankful for my life. Signing off, here is Hajia, and remember, it's never too late to learn something new.
My name is Kellen. I'm 11 years old, and I'm in 6th grade at Manchester Academic Charter School in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I am thankful for my life because without that, I can't really be thankful for anything. Next thing is my friends and family because they are the only things that keep me moving and motivated, and they help me through tough times. Second to last thing is my school because even though sometimes I don't want to go or I'm tired or I just don't want to learn, they give me a shot at education and they make me smarter than I was before. Lastly is my home because it is lovely and the people inside of it are lovely. R.I.P. my dog.
Deanna Beringer and Ben Rutkowski collected those and produced them along with help from Tad Whistle. It's time for us to take a listen to another youth feature. I think you'll really enjoy this. High school seniors, Amonte from Highlands High School, and Xander from Riverview Junior Senior High welcome Khalil, also from Highlands, and Molly from City of Bridges. They're going to talk about expectations that people, young people, have for educators, best ways to support learners. It's a feature produced here in our studios in collaboration with Remake Learning and KnowledgeWorks. It's part of the Remaking Tomorrow podcast and a special youth takeover edition.
You're listening to a youth takeover edition of the Remaking Tomorrow podcast, where teens host the program and welcome peer guests.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Remaking Tomorrow, a series of conversations about the future of learning. I'm Amonti. I am a rising senior, and I go to Highlands High School, and I'm here with my co-host.
I'm Xander. I'm a rising senior, and I live in Oakmont.
This is a podcast powered by Remake Learning, a network that ignites engaging, relevant, and equitable learning practices in support of young people navigating rapid social and technological change. On today's episode, we'll be talking with two youth guests about how students should be supported through their education today and in the future. To start, let's meet our guests.
I'm Khalil. I'm 17. I'm an upcoming senior, and I live in Atrona Heights, PA.
My name is Molly. I'm also a rising senior, and I live in the South Side.
So today, we'll be talking about our educators, teachers, counselors, after-school program providers, the adults involved in the education of youth, your expectations for them, and the best way they can support you. But first, is there a teacher or adult that stands out to you as having had a big impact on your learning journey so far? What do you remember most about them?
Well, specifically, there's Mr. Newell. He's really had, like, one of the most impacts on my life. I look at him, it keeps it driving me, honestly.
Molly?
Yeah, I had a fourth grade literacy teacher who really fostered a love for writing in me. She just helped me after class, critiquing my work and reading it and giving me, like, special assistance. She also helped me with my application to Kappa for writing.
I had an English teacher for my junior year when I was going through some tough things with my life. He stepped in. You know, if you need this time to, like, work on yourself, you can push back these assignments a little bit and worry about that in the future time whenever you're ready.
I had a teacher in 10th grade who would keep a blanket in her drawer for me to let me nap in her classroom during lunch because she knew I was just exhausted from some things going on at home.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
What about some people that aren't teachers but are involved in your school or extracurricular community? How are they impactful?
For sure, my brothers. They're literally my main support.
How about you, Molly?
Yeah, mainly just family. I mean, my school's so small, we don't really have anyone other than teachers.
I definitely do it for my mom. My mom's had, like, a huge impact in my life. And just, like, she pushes me to be as good as I can be in any aspect.
I would say my mom, too. She was a single parent for a while. So me just making her proud really is something that's big for me. So what expectations do students have for educators?
I feel like some educators don't take their job as serious as they should. Like, they're not there to teach. They're just there to be there.
You know, make money.
Yeah. They're there for a check. Yeah. They're not there for the better of the students.
I do feel like I'd kind of disagree because I don't know if anyone's really becoming a teacher for the money.
Yeah.
Outright, you know. But
well, it depends on your school, too.
Yeah. I mean, that's true. I do feel like a lot of teachers get tired over time and they just decline in, like, their will. But I think also a lot of the problem is, like, the rules that the district places on them, because I have a lot of teachers who want to do something different, but they can't go off script. Yeah.
It comes to trying to a certain extent with your students, too.
You have to put in full effort. But there's, like, certain teachers that, like, really care. Like the teacher I said in my 11th grade. He really cared, and he took steps up, and he did that for every single student that worked hard and tried their best. That's how it should be. If there's a student that doesn't do their work and a student that shows no effort, if they need that time, they should work ahead of that.
Like, they should be reaching out to them and try to discover the problem that's very deep-rooted in the behavior.
My school is so small that we only have three teachers, and the teachers wow. there, I are totally focused on us and making sure that we're okay first. But because it's a new school that is doing that so differently than like most schools are, where they're really focused on us. The other aspect of learning is less important, which is an interesting dynamic, but it's also hard because I'm not someone who brings that part of me into school.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm kind of just there to learn, but if I'm struggling and need that extra help, I want it. But when there's so much room for the extra help, it gets hard to balance and keep learning like I'm there to do, you know?
Mm-hmm. Sometimes students also have to be willing to accept the help. Sometimes students are always in
denial to not get the help
from the teachers. Mm-hmm.
I think that's a big problem with our generation is that we don't feel comfortable reaching out to help.
Yeah. We want to be independent.
Yeah.
Right. And another thing is, it's like a teacher will teach you something and then drop it. They're like, okay, you should have been paying attention in class if you need help. And
yeah,
it's like, maybe
that.
I was, and you could have been going through something too. Like something could have just happened. Honestly, we're all 17. So, you know, like your boyfriend could have just broke up with you or something like that. And you're not in the right mindset in school. So I think teachers need to understand that we are our age and we have other things going on besides school. So if we really need that extra help, just appreciate that we're reaching out and asking you.
I know, and at least in my school, a lot of kids don't really trust that guidance counselor. People like reach out to the school nurse whenever like they need that extra help. They have the nurse to go to if they need the break from school and being so focused on it. They can just go into the nurse's office and chill there and talk to her about the problems. And that nurse is so amazing. Mm-hmm. She like takes that extra step just to make sure the students are really doing okay.
And a shout out to the people that work with the school that are like that, because you even have coaches that are really there for you and your teachers are really stepping back a lot. So
coaches are a huge aspect, especially with me being an athlete.
There's like certain teachers who are able to like reach out for students and be there for them. And they're kind of there for everyone, those certain teachers, which is obviously like very incredible. But at the same time, it's like, why isn't every teacher being there for some amount of students instead of having one teacher, like that one coach that everyone relies on, that one nurse that everyone goes to?
Another thing is favorites.
Oh, like teachers.
I knew that was going to be a touchy spot. So teachers have favorites, and the kids that aren't necessarily the favorite or kids that are really struggling, they won't get any attention on things that they need help with.
Like, I have a certain teacher that like picks favorites on athletes, and even though it's in like my favor, it's still like completely unfair to other people because like they're so – he's like, oh, I won't put in the grades until the deadline happens.
You don't understand how much that happens at our school.
Yeah.
Like, but some teachers don't even care about the athletes.
Oh, my gosh.
But, like, it's not even like we're not doing the work. We are doing the work and are still taking time. Like, I had a teacher once take 2 weeks to put my grade in, and I was ineligible for the next game. Each week you have eligibility. You can't have two Fs that Friday at a certain time before the school day's out.
And say you're really struggling with a subject. And I know for math, I was really struggling with math last year, being online and over the computer. And my teacher, she stayed home and she wasn't coming back to school. And when I tried to switch my class to another math class, I couldn't get that because, you know, the schedule was already made. So that was hard. And I remember having some difficulty with my sport because of math class.
I've seen like other students and other athletes be in that ineligible spot. I mean, it's not a bad thing, but it also could be. Like, he shouldn't be putting off putting in grade just so athletes can be eligible for their sport. I feel like they should just do, like, right when they're supposed to do it on a consistent schedule and not go, like, oh, I'm going to let it slide for this athlete because he's one of the best on the court or one of the best on the field.
There are some kids in my school that get very special treatment, and it's like their project will be past due. And say they have other work from other classes and they need to catch up. With the eligibility thing, the teachers will let them slide and give them 100% on things just so that they can do their sport. And that is another thing that's very unacceptable in schools.
I feel like regular students should get that privilege too, you know what I mean? Like, if I wasn't an athlete, then I would feel some type of way about that. Say I miss a project. He did too. The teacher exempts him and I don't get exempt, then SOL for me. And yeah.
It's almost the same thing in college that I've noticed just from touring schools where they talk about like, oh, here's our athletes' training area. and then here are special tutors they can go to. And, like, I know that when you're a college athlete, obviously, that is very hard.
Now, do college, like, regular college kids get the same, privilege to tutors?
I think they do, but I think that what I noticed is that people who are part of a sports team, they have their own most tutors. Definitely. They have their own, like, because they have to maintain, like, a certain GPA or whatever to play or however that works. I don't know. But it feels like they have all these different things specific to them, like their own tutors. And it's like, why do you get your own tutors and your own help when everyone else has to share X amount? Not that that isn't enough, but it's just, like, a little, like, weird.
Lopsided.
Yeah, and then they can get one-to-one time with their specialized tutors. And say you're in a group of students and you're, like, uncomfortable and you don't want to talk about what's happening. And, like, if you have that one-on-one time with your tutor, you could be like, hey, this stuff is going on. Like, you can you understand, like, where I'm coming from, like, why I'm struggling in this class, and then move on from there. And then you and that tutor will have a special connection.
I mean, I definitely do not think that I'm a favorite by any of my teachers. It's the same thing. Like, I don't get extra time. I don't get help. You kind of get forgotten about if you're not either, like, a problem or accelerating. Yeah. So if you're not, like, a bad kid getting kicked out, or if you're not the top of the class, you're kind of just, like, forgotten about, as if, like, you don't need something from them. Or even if, like, there's a disconnect between you and your teachers, like, I personally don't really connect with any of my teachers, so I don't feel comfortable opening up to them. And it's kind of, like, seen as if that's my fault.
That's the sad part, because, like, if a student and a teacher have a good connection, like, it could help with that class or your situation.
So what do you hope that educators would do more of?
Have you guys ever been, like, taught something through a conversation where they're just saying something, then your class is, like, firing back questions and they keep going and you guys are just talking about it? Because I retain so much more than just sitting there and them, like, reading a script.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, conversations about it and, like, being able to connect it to something else and building off of something is so much, like, easier for me to understand.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. I wish they would reach out more. If you look like you're upset in class, they reach out and they're like, yo, like, how are you doing? Like, be honest with me. If you feel some certain way about whatever's going on outside of school, you can be like, I feel like that's respectful enough that you can say, I don't really want to tell you about it. That's too personal.
Yeah.
But there's still something going on. And I'm struggling, like, I need you to understand.
Yeah. Like, there are some students that have behavioral issues, and they'll be in class really, I wouldn't say acting up, but really distracting everyone else from learning, which is not really fair. But also, the teachers will just kick them out and have them exempt from class, and they'll be like, you can't come in here ever again. So then they're stuck in the office with this work that they don't know how to do, and the teacher doesn't want to deal with them. Then they might have to reach out to a private tutor and then get some help like that. But I definitely agree with Sander on teachers reaching out more and trying to understand what's going on.
Teachers need to listen to us more about how we learn and what we want to learn. Because I think now people who have gotten out of college are starting to be like, yeah, you don't really use that high school class. You don't use this math. And all of that. So I think that, like, they could listen to us more about what we want to learn to make it more interesting and everything.
What would you like teachers to do less of?
I don't mean to sound like an elementary student or nothing, but, like, homework is pointless. Like, for example, say you get homework and you don't have no help at home. Like, you're stuck. And then the next day you're in class. You don't break down what you had to do for homework. Y'all just go over it.
Yeah, I feel like teachers definitely rush through that. Sometimes they don't even go over the homework, and you're like, well, I don't know. Like, if I was confused on this, I don't
take
the
homework either.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think that teachers should make homework for you to want to learn yourself, for you to take home and practice on your own instead of grading it.
Like, if you're going over homework assignments like you're supposed to, and the students are just, like, completely off.
That just brings you back to the, why are you doing it this way?
Exactly.
Teachers should not call students out as much as they do.
I've had teachers that are like, quote unquote, not to call anyone out and then directly call someone out.
Yeah.
If I knew the answer, I'd raise my hand. You don't need to call on me.
If you call on someone when your hand is down, that's the worst feeling. When your hand's down, you're like, oh, I don't know the answer.
Like what am I saying? And then they make you feel
almost
stupid.
Like taunting almost.
What are the most important traits for an effective teacher to have?
I think caring is a huge one. Personable.
Sure. Yeah, being personable. Connecting with students.
Treating us like we're actual human beings and not just some people that they go to work to see.
Us being high school students, I think that teachers should be more on our level. They should not talk down to us, but talk to us.
Yes.
They should talk with us.
They should try to bring us up with them. That's why they're called a teacher.
Educator.
Yes. What's one thing parents and teachers can do to make tomorrow a more promising place for every student learner?
Like, personally, I think what we need most in the world right now is conversation. Hold a conversation that's not just one person talking, like a conversation where you say something, they say something, blah, blah, blah. And then you learn something and you grow from it and you teach something. Like, in every conversation, you should be learning something and you should be teaching something. I mean, not to say that that would solve the world's problems, but I think we'd have a lot brighter of a future if we were taught that way. If teachers talked to us like we were worthy of having a conversation, if we could teach them something.
In my school, at least, we have a personal finance class. And I feel like that is a huge step for every school that needs to be a thing.
Mm-hmm.
We need to learn how to write checks. We need to learn how to do taxes.
Oh, yeah.
We need to learn
for
how
sure.
that stuff works.
Learn money in general.
Yes.
Learn
and
how
I
to
think
budget.
If your school doesn't have that, and I think that's a huge thing that they should, your parents need to step up at our age, at that 16, 17, even 15 level. And that's when you can get a job. You got to learn how to write checks. You got to learn how to do your tax. You got to learn how to deposit a check. You got to open a bank account. Like, that stuff needs to be taught from someone at a younger age than it is. Because there's people that I know that are in their 20s and still don't understand how the heck checking works.
Or still don't have a job.
Or still don't have a job. Or still don't deposit checks.
Some parents don't know how to communicate with their children. They'll either take it as disrespect or backtalk, or they just won't listen and it'll turn into an argument.
That disrespect.
Like,
yeah.
Like, just trying to express yourself.
You can try to express yourself, but they're going to think you're angry or something.
Yep.
And they can't adjust to it. They're not used to it because, like, sometimes they can be old-fashioned or whatnot.
In that case, or parents who are absent or who just don't know anything about personal finance, I feel like it should be the job of the people that we are having educate our kids to do that.
This Youth Takeover edition of the Remaking Tomorrow podcast is a collaboration of Remake Learning, Knowledge Works, and SLB Radio Productions. Opinions solely reflect those of the individual speaking. For more details, visit remakelearning.org.
And you can subscribe to the Remaking Tomorrow podcast wherever you look for podcasts. In a few moments, you're going to meet Asia Lynn, who is 16 and a junior at Hampton High School. She is an Allegheny County Youth Poet Ambassador for Alphabet City at City of Asylum as part of a wonderful, radical impact project made possible by the Allegheny Regional Asset District. You'll have a chance to hear from her, hear some of her work, and learn a bit more about her momentarily.
Headliner joins you in supporting SLB Radio and Youth Express. Headliner is a cloud-based software that media makers can use to add video to podcasts, music, and other audio projects, making it easier to share their creations via social media, YouTube, and websites. Headliner also offers a photo and video library, text captioning, and simplified audio-video editing. Additional information is available at headliner.app.
We have had a very busy morning
with instant messages, text messages, email, Facebook conversations. If we have not gotten back to you, we appreciate it. I think I am all caught up now. Ricky and I both think we are. But if we missed you, our apologies. And if it's your style to listen without actively participating, insert your name right here. You are a big part of the Saturday Light Brigade. Broadcasting live from historic Allegheny Square, along with Ricky Berger and Chad Green, this is Larry Berger. Today's show also produced by Alexis Thompson. And this is the show that gets your weekend off to a good start, the Saturday Light Brigade. Saturday mornings on a great group of radio stations and internet radio stations and streaming services, including TuneIn, Simple Radio, Streama, Radio Garden, and slbradio.org/radio.
There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. Got to stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn, and nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speaking their minds, getting so much resistance from behind. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. We got to stop now. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Paranoia strikes deep into your heart. It will creep. And it starts when you're always afraid. You step out of line and the man comes to take you away. We better stop now. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. We got to stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Michael Logan at the Saturday Light Brigade, along with Lizanne Knott, or Lizanne Knott. Man, the print gets smaller and smaller. And Jesse Terry here. Maybe we'll get one of these big, huge, large screens for me to look at, or I'll just visit the eye doctor and do what I'm supposed to do. Well, it's now a pleasure for me to introduce to you poet laureate, actually a poet ambassador from the Allegheny County Youth Poet Ambassador Program for Alphabet City at City of Asylum. Her name is Asia Lynn. Welcome, Asia. It's good to have you here.
It's good to be here.
Tell me a bit about yourself, what you clearly you like to write, but what else do you like to do?
So I like to write, obviously. I also really enjoy theater. At my school, I'm in like the plays and the musicals, and I do a lot of extracurriculars. I just really enjoy performing and just anything to do with writing.
Do you any sports?
No.
No?
Yeah, that is not my greatest area.
And let's see, has there been a play yet this year?
Yeah, we actually just had our performance last week, and I was a narrator in it, and it was called Kill Me Deadly. It was like this 1940s murder type thing.
Is it funny?
Yes, yeah, it was very funny.
It sounds like it's almost a parody or a takeoff on a horror movie. Do you know what musical your school is doing this year?
Yeah, we're going to be doing Into the Woods, which I'm so excited about. It's one of my favorites.
Nice. Have you seen the movie?
I have.
I haven't yet. I started to watch it, and I said, this is really good. I want to wait and watch this when I can really enjoy it. Do you want to say hello to anybody who might be listening right now?
I guess my mom and dad, probably. I know a few of my friends said that they would listen, but hi.
Hello. I'm glad they may hear you when this is played back and available on demand. So, Asia, when did you discover that you liked to write? Do you remember sort of realizing it was a skill you wanted to cultivate?
Well, I guess I wrote a little bit in elementary school, but it wasn't really like a passion of mine. It was just something I had to do for school, I guess. But it was really in middle school whenever I realized that I enjoyed writing. And part of it was like, people would tell me, oh, you're pretty good at writing. And that obviously was like, oh, well, maybe I should do this. And then I think it was either 7th or 8th grade, I discovered spoken word poetry online, and I was obsessed with it. It was just so cool to me that people could, like, that their words could be so powerful, I guess. And it just was something I wanted to be able to do.
That makes sense, given how much you like acting too. But with spoken word, one big difference is it's your own words.
Yeah.
Typically. I'm assuming you've performed as a slam poet or spoken word poet or?
Well, the only really opportunities I've gotten to do that in is actually at my church. We have this fine arts program, and there's like a bunch of different art-related categories you can do. And one of them was spoken word poetry. And I'm like, this is my chance to be able to do this. Because, I mean, in Hampton, there aren't a ton of like places you can go to read your poetry.
There aren't these little basement coffee shops with candlelit tables. And
not
you
really.
Go down and, you know, there's not a Greenwich Village section of Hampton. I know the area. So that had to be neat. Well, I would think it's one thing to be on stage and read from a script. That's another thing to share your own words. Was that hard? Or I think it takes a lot of courage to do either.
It's kind of almost, oddly enough, the same as performing someone else's stuff for me sometimes. It seems really intimidating until you actually start speaking, and then it's suddenly so easy. It just starts coming out, I guess. And it feels so good to be able to share something you've made. And it's really special.
It's great. Have you thought about what you might like to do after you get out of high school?
I definitely want to go to college, but I'm not sure for what.
Yeah, there's a lot to consider, and especially as a junior, most folks are still, you're still figuring it out, even when you're a senior or even when you're in college. How has the pandemic been? My memory is Hampton was able to navigate it with a blend of both in-person and remote learning. Is that the case?
The way that we did it was, we had hybrid. We had Zoom calls on the days we weren't at school, and then we had days where we were in school, and we had desk shields and all of that stuff. And it wasn't an ideal situation, but I think the way we did it at Hampton was probably the smoothest way we could have. It was still pretty difficult, though.
Did
it leave you with any new kinds of feelings for maybe what you didn't realize you appreciated as much, or things that you wish had been done differently? I'm not trying to put you on the spot. I'm just curious.
Yeah, I'd say so. In the moment, I was thinking, well, this isn't that bad, is it? But then whenever some things started going back to normal, like we would go to school every day and I would get to see my friends from the other half of the alphabet, I was thinking, oh, this is so much better. I didn't realize I even missed this, but I did. So
interesting. Yeah, I have some knowledge. Different districts have done different things. Hampton is relatively small and also spaced out enough. But yeah, you're only going to see, I guess, the first half, right? The A through M's, not the N through Z's. And there's really no way you can change that.
Yeah.
Well, I know you brought three poems to share, and we'll talk a little bit more after your first one, but would you like to share it now? And if there's anything to say ahead of it, feel free if it needs to be set up. Otherwise, the stage is yours.
Okay. Well, this first one is called Mind in Hand, Pen to Paper. It's actually the one that's on the Alphabet City website that I submitted for to become a poet ambassador. And I think it was reflecting on a lot of the events that happened during like the 2020 year, where there were a lot of social issues coming to light. And just as a writer trying to figure out how am I supposed to address this? Am I even supposed to be the one addressing it? So yeah, I said, I am not the things I write, nor the words that leave my mouth. My actions and mistakes are nearly indiscernible these days. On these days, I will not regurgitate thoughts that are not mine in hoping that integrity will always live here. Hearing the difficult things never gets easier. But today, I will listen and pay attention like I should have yesterday. I have important things to write about, but I am afraid they are not mine to put words to say. It is a terrifyingly vulnerable thing. Things are big and frightening, but this world wants us to forget. Regret has reinforced these walls for long enough, and I refuse to leave it all to time. Time will not become my excuse. With words unloose on my tongue, my writing is not who I am, but neither is this passivity. I am young. So then, I still have time. I'll fight with my sword and pick up the pen.
That's Asia Lynn, who is here from Hampton High School, age 16. Interesting to hear that. What I'm hearing is kind of a sense of obligation that you felt really compelled to not let the moment pass by, but also were wrestling with, is this your moment to represent?
Yeah. I think whenever bad things happen, obviously, you want to do something about it. But sometimes it's not, like, for example, if the Black community is having a social issue, you shouldn't ignore it, obviously, but I shouldn't speak as though it's mine, if that makes sense. Like, my voice is, like, the most important voice to like speak to this, if that makes sense.
Of course, it's tricky. I would suspect you don't want to appropriate another segment's issues, nor do you want to appear as a savior. You want to be an ally, right?
Exactly.
And that's hard to navigate as an adult, let alone is somebody who's becoming one. I don't mean to be ageist, but I mean it's really hard to navigate that sort of thing. It sounds like you strike me as somebody who would have a very tough time being passive. Am I right about that?
A little bit, I guess. I have my opinions about things, I guess, but sometimes I do find it difficult to speak up because I'm afraid about how I'll come off a lot.
Yeah, I guess what I'm glad I asked the question that way because you can filter yourself, so to speak, I'm sure, but I suspect there's a lot on your mind, too. That's what I meant by not keeping passive. What is language arts like in school? Are there people encouraging you as part of the English classes that you have? I hope so.
Yeah, for sure. All of my teachers have been really great and supportive of me. Like my teacher last year, we did a poetry assignment, and he really encouraged me in that, and that was really cool. And my speech and debate coach, she also is really great at encouraging and like challenging me and just really motivating me to continue to do my thing, I guess.
Can you tell me more about how speech and debate works at Hampton? Because my high school did not have speech and debate, and there aren't as many in our region as you might think. Are they teams or are they individuals?
Yeah, we are a team. And, well, I don't really do the debate part. I'm very much so more of the interested in the speech aspect of speech and debate. But everyone does work together. And obviously in the debate part, there's more of an opportunity to like be in little teams. But we are kind of one collective team because we meet weekly and we bounce ideas off of each other and help like develop the things we're creating. And
in the speech, excuse me, in the speech part, is it extemporaneous or is it something prepared?
Well, there actually is like an extempt category, but there's also like interpretation events where you find a script and you perform it. So it's kind of almost more like just acting. But then there are also ones, the one that I like to participate in, it's called Program Oral Interpretation. And you kind of create your own script, but by using other people's words, essentially. And it's a mixture of news articles and book excerpts and poems. It's a really cool thing.
Do you ever use other students' works to be your script, so to speak?
Unfortunately, I have to use things that are published online, mm-hmm. which is great, obviously, because there's a lot of great resources. But I know there are a lot of people around me that have great things that they have to say. But that, I guess that's just kind of another event that they'd have to share that in.
I'm asking partly because wouldn't that be a great way to develop empathy? You're talking
sure.
about understanding and relating more to people passionate and impacted by the Black Lives Matter movement. Imagine somebody who wrote first-person poems reacting to that,
yeah.
perhaps as a Black teen, and you're reading it. Or maybe somebody not as familiar with some of those issues as you are reading it. It's just
yeah.
interesting. To me, at least, that's one way of getting people to consider other people's perspectives.
It really is, yeah.
I know you brought three poems all together. Do you want to share another one?
Yeah, sure.
Tell me a little bit about it before you read it.
Okay, this one, something that I'm sure all writers are very familiar with is writer's block. And that's something I deal with a lot with poetry. And so a few months ago, actually, I was kind of stuck and I just wanted to write about something. So I asked my friends, hey, let me know. I'll write a poem about you and that will maybe help me get back into it. So, and a few people responded and I just really liked the way this one turned out. I was going to rename it, but then I thought it was cool to keep it true to what it was. So it's just to Maddie, my friend Maddie, that I wrote the poem about. So, yeah. Miss Sunshine's smile and golden hair, to see the whole of summer swept up in a familiar face. You remind me of how much I love the sun, the sticky sweet of ice cream and the lemonade stands that pop up on street corners. Laughter with you is hopscotch happiness, the free fall of swing jumping in the sun again. So let's visit, Miss Summer Smile. Hello once more. Let's sit a while.
That's beautiful. How did she react when she heard that? I'm assuming it's a girl. Yeah. Maddie is likely a girl.
Yeah. Well, I sent it to her over text. So you can't always understand how people react through just their messages. But she seemed very happy about it and I guess kind of flattered. Like, aw, that's very sweet of you to say.
That's a good way to get out of feeling blocked like that. It's really hard. Sometimes you just have to do it, but it's still so hard.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find yourself often, if you're writing, that you might end up in a completely different place than you thought you were going to end up?
Yeah. I don't know if this is exactly what you're asking, but I often have like random poem ideas and I'll write them down and then I don't really have a full vision of where I want it to go. But then I'll come up with a fuller idea later and then think, oh, this line would be perfect. So then I end up using it for that. And it's not exactly how I meant the line to come across, but in the new context, it has its own kind of value.
Yeah, it really teaches you to be patient with yourself and kind of let the process take place, I would think, which is hard to do. How do you feel about prose? I suspect you're a good writer overall.
I really enjoy writing, just overall. And I always joke with my one friend, because she's also a writer, and we have a hard time keeping like the narrative kind of voice out of our poetry, and we have a difficult keeping the poetry out of our narrative voice. And so they kind of bleed into one another. But kind of like what I said before, I don't always have a very developed idea of what I want to write. So it's easier to keep it shorter in poems. So, yeah.
Interesting. I've never thought about it that way. So I guess when I think about the narrative voice, it's more explicit and detailed, evident or clear, where poetry is a bit more artistic, isn't quite the right word, but subject to interpretation, maybe.
Yeah, more abstract, I'd say.
Yeah, that's the... So those are two very different sides.
Yeah.
Of the world of writing. Do you have any brothers and sisters?
I actually do have a sister, yes.
What's her name?
Her name's Laurel.
Younger or older?
Older, yeah.
What does she do?
She's into actuarial science, so a very different thing than what I'm doing.
I have a sister-in-law that has a degree in actuarial science. And when she first... said she was an actuary. I said, well, we accept all kinds of people. But that's really an amazing job, isn't it?
Yeah, it seems very cool. A lot of the stuff flies over my head. I'm good at math, but that's just a whole other realm, in my opinion.
Oh, it sure is. It's something. Is she local or...
Yeah, she goes to college within the state, so yeah.
Excellent. It's really interesting to get to know you. You've got a lot of talent, and you can probably do whatever it is you want to. Before you read your next poem or share that poem, can you tell me a little bit about what the experience with City of Asylum has been like?
Well, I was actually introduced to it, City of Asylum, through my one friend's mom, who's an English teacher, and she told me about the poetry opportunity, and I thought it was just really cool. And I'd actually never heard of City of Asylum, but as I looked into it, it kind of blew me away. I had no idea that there was something like that here in Pittsburgh. and through the different cohort meetings that we've had with the poet laureate and poet ambassadors, it's just really cool seeing how different, I guess, we all are, but we all have a passion for the same thing. And I listened to the other interviews that you did with them, and it was just really cool being able to see their own poetry style.
Yeah, you all have, of course, you've all been different and really interesting to learn about. Turning away from poetry for a minute, this is kind of a weird question, but I know you can handle it. If I gave you a magic wand to change one thing in the world,
oh gosh,
and or can you think of one of the things you might? You don't. I won't hold you to the one thing, but is there anything you really wish were different, or that there were more of, or there was less of?
That's a difficult question.
That's why we have this thinking music. you can think about it.
I guess I'd want there to be just more openness overall to hear other people, because I don't think it's really realistic for people to agree on everything all the time. That's just not how the world works. But just people being open to hear the other perspective is something that I think would do us worlds of good.
That's an amazing answer to that question, and one I've never heard before, because it's actually really concrete and doable, at least in everybody's individual life, if we just chose to listen without judgment.
Yeah.
And somehow we've really been wired to do otherwise based on the atmosphere we're in.
Definitely.
Maybe. But it just, you don't need to judge what somebody is saying, unless they ask you to, maybe, or want to. Coming from a debater, that's a great point of view. Well, you've got one more to share with us, and I'm eager to hear it.
Yeah. So this one is definitely more narrative. It's not as much based on real life things, I guess. Like I said, I enjoy the drama club and theater, so I tend to be a little bit over dramatic sometimes in my writing too. And yeah, so I guess that's where this one comes from. Says, yours is the hand I would hold. Yours is the hand I would hold for longer than I have to. For longer than I should, I'd wait for you. To become the whole sky, I'd write you. Into every sickly love poem, I'd forget you. In the last line, I'd leave you. Until I forget it's my fault. I have made you into something you're not. You'll wait for me, and my forgotten I'm sorry will have dried up. And all that is left is this fossil, a remembrance of organic matter once living. But if only someone had told me, you can't recreate the breathing out of just the bones. I will bury you back inside my heart and be something new the next time. Someone whispers, I love you, but it won't be me. For by that time, I will have said goodbye, and your hand will have let go of mine.
Wow, you're a really good writer. Do you play any instruments?
I do. I play the bass in the orchestra, and my best friend and I always joke because we both play the bass, and we always say how our job is to keep the beat, but that's the one thing we can't do. I don't know if it's 100% true, but I understand the instrument and I enjoy the instrument, but it is not my number one talent, I would say.
It could be hard to do that. Thank you for being here. Is there anything else you'd like to add, Asia, that maybe I didn't give you space to talk about? Or?
Well, I guess one cool thing that I'm just excited about for this year is my friend and I, Audrey is her name, and she's another great poet of that I know. And we started this club at our school called Showcase Club, in which we are creating a space for artists. So whether they do poetry or paint or do digital art or play an instrument, they have a place where they can perform or just share with others. And we're really excited.
You're adding that venue we mentioned was missing before. Well, that's great. Well, thank you so much for being here. And also to City of Asylum, you'll find information about the Youth Poet Ambassador Program at its website. Asia Lin is who was with us, broadcasting live from historic Allegheny Square, along with Ricky Berger and Chad Green and Distel Fink, coming up shortly with Pennsylvania Dutch-inspired folk jazz. This is Larry Berger, and this is the show that gets your weekend off to a good start, the Saturday Light Brigade, Saturday mornings at WRCT Pittsburgh, WIUPFM Indiana, WMCO New Concord, WNJR Washington, WCUC Clarion, WMCK.FM McKeesport, PCTV Comcast 21, Verizon 47 Pittsburgh, Loudspeaker.fm, Fort Collins, Colorado, RadioPhoenix.org, and online streaming services such as TuneIn, Simple Radio, Streama, and SLBRadio.org.
Majeski, Johnny G, Eddie Juiced, Johnny Pesky, Thornton Lee, Danny Gardella, Van Lingo Mongo, Whitey Karowski, Max Lanier, Eddie Waitkus, and Johnny Vandermeer. Bob Estalella, Van Lingo Mongo, Augie Bergamo, Sigmund Jacoki, Big Johnny Mize, and Barney McCoskey, Hal Trosky, Augie Galan, and Pinky May. Frenchie Bordagaray, Phil Cavaretta, George McQuinn, Howard Paulette, and Early Wynn, Roy Campanella, Van Lingo Mongo. Augie Bergamo, Sigmund Jacoki, Big Johnny Mize, and Barney McCoskey, Hal Trosky, John Antonelli, Ferris Fain, Frankie Crosetti, Johnny Sane, Harry Brookine, and Lou Boudreau, Frankie Gustine, and Claude Passo, Eddie Basinski, Ernie Lombardi, Huey Mulcahy, Van Lingo Mongo.
That is the late and greater than great Dave Frischberg, who passed away at the age of 88 on Wednesday. Do you know the story of that song? He was looking at his baseball card collection, and he just was really enamored at the names that he was seeing. I believe this was a Brooklyn Dodgers mostly. And he decided to create a song
based on all of the names that he saw there.
The Children's Museum of Pittsburgh and Museum Lab are proud to support the Saturday Light Brigade. Time tickets are available at pittsburghkids.org. The museum is open Thursday to Sunday from 10 a.m. until 5 p.m. Museum Lab is open on Saturday and Sunday from noon until 5. The Children's Museum of Pittsburgh and Museum Lab are filled with opportunities to experience kindness, joy, creativity,